Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. It's about 7 past the hour. Glad you could make it. Boy, a document dump on Mitt Romney. I guess you y'all saw that. the businesses that he's been involved in. Woo! Lord have mercy! This is not what you would expect from a good Mormon. Or a good, you know, good whatever. Casinos, cigarettes. Oh my God. You can get this at Gawker.com, the entire download if you want. It's being referred to as a treasure trove of leaked documents about Mitt Romney's, this guy's really, I'm surprised. I thought Mitt Romney was a Mormon in spirit as well as a Mormon in form or whatever you want to call it. But obviously he's not. He is just a typical scum sucking, lowest possible denominator, capitalist who, will take money from anybody who will give it to him, any business. He's one of the owners, part owners or investors of the National Enquirer. It's just, what a joke. All right, we might get to that a little bit later. From Sand, in, I think it's upstate New York. I should know this, but I don't have it in front of me. Mike, we had another anti-drone demonstration yesterday. We had it at a square where there are 4 traffic lights. And we had the opportunity to ask drivers to take a flyer. You know, they had some stuff printed up. Some of the comments I heard, and this should be no surprise. Yeah, sure, let our pilots get shot down. Drop a bomb and kill them all. No wonder this country's going to hell with you communists. That was regarding the poster that Sand was holding that had pictures of dead children. They would have grown up to be terrorists anyways. Sand writes, I could see children in some of the cars looking as if they were asking their parent or whoever was driving what was going on. This was our second protest at this location, and we had many more peaceful folks show up than the last one. We hope it will keep growing. Sand, one cannot be anti-war and pro-Obama. That's the part that is so scary to me. Is the vehemence with which people will react when they see demonstrators demonstrating for an end to killing, an end to war, demonstrating in favor of justice, in favor of peace. Our good friend who runs Women Standing, womenstanding.org is her website, Jude Morford, has told me a few tales. Most of the reactions to her have been, as far as I know, fairly peaceful and not verbally assaulting. Jude is a very peaceful person. She doesn't get in, for example, like I would, get in somebody's face. Jude only stands in recognition of American military personnel, and by extension, personnel, people in other countries who have been killed by a warlike policy. She stands with a pair of combat boots with flowers in them. But I can remember marching a silent march in 1970 in Raleigh. In memory, it was on the birth date of the the commemoration of the assassination, 2 years of Martin Luther King Jr. And I have to be a student at the time at NC State University in Raleigh, and it was a silent march. There might have been 200-300 of us. And we marched down Hillsborough Avenue, which bordered one of the borders of the NC State campus. On the other side of the street was Fraternity Row, and we had agreed in advance that this would be a silent march. Some of us carried candles, and now you got to keep in mind where we were and the time. Raleigh, North Carolina, April 1970. pretty scary time in North Carolina. Sorry, I don't want to offend anyone in North Carolina, but that's the truth. And as we march down Hillsborough Avenue with our silent march, the comments that were coming from the front porches of Fraternity Row were fairly scary and threatening and verbally violent. And lots and lots of really nasty references to having sex with our mothers and having sex with black folk or having sex with white folk. I mean, it was just pretty rough. I could never understand that kind of vehemence. Why not, if someone wants to demonstrate for peace, for justice? Now, I get it. I mean, don't try to explain to me, well, Malloy, you just said it was Raleigh in 1970. I get that. But I can't understand the kinds of insults and invective and ugliness and hatred that is hurled at people who, like Sand here, who, or on occasion a Jude, or anybody, any of you who have demonstrated for peace, for justice, for an end to war, against the death of the planet. The ugliness and the hatred that comes from people in those moments is just astonishing to me. I try to think of a word, stupefying. What's the point? Why not just observe the demonstrator or the peaceful resistor and move on or not? I don't know. I don't know anything. Anyway, from Ray in Bat Blank Crazy, Arizona, the part I left out is of the vernacular for guano. From Bat Blank Crazy, Arizona, Ray writes, Mike, I was listening to last night's podcast when you stated that any log cabin Republican is insane. If a log cabin Republican is insane, what if they are also Catholic? Actually, let's take it all the way. How about a black Catholic log cabin Republican? Can there really be anybody that effed up out there? I think as a public service, you should have an open invitation for any black Catholic log cabin Republican to call in during the RNC convention. Assure them that they will be placed in front of your phone queue. This could be epic. If you can turn that lost soul around by the end of the conversation, give him a podcast and I will reimburse you. We may have to deprogram these sick blanks one at a time. One at a time. Ray. Yeah, that would be kind of funny, wouldn't it? A black Catholic log cabin Republican. Oh, my God. And you can take that out as far as you want to, actually. There's a very strange case. Somebody sent me a link. Oh, it was, I think it was Reg at tvnewslies.org. It was something that they have up on their site. And it's about a Marine veteran, Marine Corps veteran, 26-year-old person who was arrested. Well, anyway, I'll share it with you when we come back. It appeared first on RT.com, and then the story had an update in the Richmond, Virginia, I think it's the News Leader, or the Times Dispatch, Richmond Times Dispatch. I'll share it with you when we come back.
Redefining Anger Management. Back to Mike Malloy.
All right, let me tell you what the story is. A guy named Brandon J. Robb, he's a Marine Corps veteran, 26 years old. Police scooped him up yesterday without, and this was in Virginia. Yeah, it was in Virginia. Anyway, police came to where he lived, scooped him up, and without presenting any charges, and even without reading his Miranda rights, took this 26-year-old to John Randolph Medical Center, where, when this was written, he's currently being held involuntarily. A video of his detention emerged online, triggering outrage among American citizens and human rights activists. John Whitehead, who I'm no fan of, he's the executive director of the Rutherford Institute. It is a civil liberties group. But I, you know, he represented, who was the woman that brought the first charges against Clinton? Paula Jones. I guess that's why. And I shouldn't be that way, because even Paula Jones has a right to representation. But anyway, I digress. He is being not represented, but it's a civil liberties group that has come to Robb's defense. John Whitehead said, quote, "For government officials to not only arrest Brandon Robb for doing nothing other than exercising his First Amendment rights to freedom of speech, but to actually force him to undergo psychological evaluations and detain him against his will goes against every constitutional principle this country was founded upon." Now, what happened on Monday, there was a hearing held in a mental institution, and government officials confirmed that this guy's Facebook posts were the only reason he was picked up. And the authorities paid no attention to his comments that those online messages were wrongly interpreted. But security forces are said to be using a piece of legislation called Virginia State Code so-and-so, emergency custody, under which it is permitted to detain a person in a mental institution without presenting any charges against him. Really? Really? What did this guy do? Well, here's an update. He was released apparently today from the Salem Veterans Affairs Hospital in Salem, Virginia, on his way to see his family. Officials from the Rutherford Institute said this afternoon. Mental assessment records of this guy, Brandon J. Robb, describe him as delusional and paranoid in the days before he was transferred to a Veterans Affairs Hospital in Salem. An assessment of Robb filled out by a Chesterfield County crisis worker. Chesterfield County is part of Richmond. The report said client, that would be Robb, believes that 9-1-1 was a conspiracy caused by the U.S. You hear what I said? He had that posted on his website. He also had posted on his website the fact that he thinks fascism is taking over the country. He was picked up August 16th by Chesterfield County Police and transferred under an emergency custody order to the John Randolph Medical Center in Hopewell, Virginia, which is also a suburb of Richmond. And then the report goes on to say client, that would be Robb, met with the FBI and Secret Service to explain recent posts on Facebook. Client's friends reported client to the FBI for posting extreme conspiracy theories and threats to President Bush, ex-President Bush. This counselor asked client about why the authorities were involved, and he said, because they know I'm onto something. Okay, the guy may be, playing with half a deck, who knows? But a special justice ordered Robb to undergo a 30-day hospital stay after finding him a threat to others and suffering from a mental illness. But the document ordering his admission to a mental hospital was flawed in that none of the criteria for involuntary admission was noted. That's what the judge ruled today and had him released. Court documents say that Rob's behavior was agitated and distracted. What the hell? Rob's family and advocates with the Rutherford Institute in Charlottesville are arguing that Rob's right to free speech had been violated and that they intend to file a civil action against those who detained him and ordered him confined. So he had some posts. I don't have the exact wording here. I don't know if they're up or have been removed. But his mother said after the hearing that as soon as an order is entered by the court, she will head to Salem to get her son. She said, "This is phenomenal. This could have happened to anyone. We're not about allowing wrongs like this to take place. This has never been anything but freedom of speech. We're going to continue to post on Facebook." A mother said her son is a true patriot who gave up military benefits for a back injury so the money could go to another veteran. There's more here. This is one of the most bizarre damn things I've come across in a long time. I don't know if I have the whole story or not, but I'll share some more with you when we come back.
Sit up and pay attention. Stand up for what you believe in. Speak up.
Truth Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So anyway, this story, a Marine veteran living in Richmond area, he posts some stuff on his Facebook page. He served two tours, one in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. He was taken into custody last Thursday after the Secret Service, the FBI, and the Chesterfield Police, just south of Richmond, arrived at his home. An FBI spokesperson said the agency had received inquiries from people concerned about the nature of postings this young man had on his Facebook page. Now, again, as far as I know, he wasn't threatening anybody. He wasn't saying, you know, I'm going to get an axe and start chopping people's heads off. What he said was, apparently, and I don't have it in front of me, but it, according to the Rutherford Institute, he made charges that the attack on this country on September 11, 2001 was an inside job. He also said that... this is what he wrote. Your leaders are planning to merge the United States into a one-world banking system. They want to put computer chips in you. These men have evil hearts. They have tricked you into supporting corporate fascism. We gave them the keys to our country. We were not vigilant with our republic. On August 15th, he posted, "The revolution is here and I will lead it." He went on to say, "I know many of you think I'm going crazy and are wondering why. Just why I've been posting the things I've been posting. I don't have the energy to explain. Just know that a new beginning is coming." He also wrote, "I'm standing against a great evil. I will do it all by myself if I have to." Now, the Richmond newspaper said that he had served in the Marines from 2005 until 2011. Was a sergeant, a combat engineer, and now apparently he operates a home-based silver numismatic coin business. What is that, a coin collector or something? So a judge ordered him released from this mental institution. Now, what does this remind you of? Huh? How many... A Day in the Life of Ivan Ivanovich. I've never read it. What is it? A Day in the Life of Ivan Ivanovich? Is it Ivanovich? Was that the book? Also, it also has a very strong Kafka stench. And this happened in Richmond, just south of Richmond, Virginia, Chesterfield County. Apparently that's incorporated now, Chesterfield, Virginia. So they bust this guy, don't tell him why he's being arrested, do not read him his rights, do not anything, and then have him involuntarily committed without using the criteria necessary for involuntary commitment to a mental hospital. They have him committed to a mental institution because of postings on Facebook. You know, I think about the things that I see on this program every single night. And when I compare what I say on this program to what this former Marine, all I have are some of the comments, I don't know. Like I say, he may have said, you know, I have secret code numbers to a nuclear bomb. I'm going to blow up the world. I don't know. But it apparently wasn't bad enough to meet the criteria necessary to have him involuntarily committed to a mental hospital. And that's what a judge ruled today. To release him. He was described by the people who talked to him originally as delusional and paranoid. Jesus Christ, I'm about as delusional and paranoid as they come. Are you kidding me? If you're not paranoid in these times, then you really are insane. I'll try to keep you posted. I have no idea what the whole story is here. I'll probably have to rely on Julian Assange to get the truth out. Now, they bust this guy because he says 9/11 was a government conspiracy and that we're heading towards a one-world banking system. Somebody ought to tell him we're already there on that one. And, you know, this other stuff he says. How about this judge, a county judge in Lubbock, Texas, Tom Head? He was on a Fox affiliate in Lubbock, Texas on Monday. And he told that station that Lubbock's law enforcement needed extra tax dollars in order to be prepared for a full-scale uprising, which he said will be a byproduct of Obama's reelection. He said this on television. This is a sheriff in Lubbock, Texas. Or, I'm sorry, a county judge. According to Head, the president is seeking to sign a variety of United Nations treaties that will effectively take precedent over domestic law. I mean, here's a guy who's goddamn insane. Not this former Marine, this judge. Head said he's going to try to hand over the sovereignty of the United States to the UN. Where do they come up with this? And then he said, and what is going to happen when that happens? Well, I'm thinking the worst, civil unrest, civil disobedience, civil war. And we're not just talking about a few riots here and there. We're talking about Lexington, Concord, take up arms and get rid of the guy. He's on television. He's a county judge. And this cockroach son of a bitch is walking around tonight while an ex-Marine is fighting to go home, a former Marine, because they said he was crazy because he said 9/11 was probably an inside job. Where in the hell do we all live? Well, Greg Pallas said it, man. An armed madhouse. So here's a county judge. Head went on. And he said that he was prepared to join the resistance. He said, quote, now what's going to happen if we do that, if the public decides to do that? You know, he's going to send in UN troops. He's talking about Obama. I don't want him in Lubbock County, okay? So I'm going to stand in front of their armored personnel carriers and say, you're not coming in here. And the sheriff, I've already asked him, I said, you going to back me? And he said, yeah, I'll back you. Well, I don't want a bunch of rookies back there. I want trained, equipped, seasoned veteran officers to back me. So he wants a tax increase in Lubbock County, Texas, this judge does, so that they can afford to buy nuclear weapons? I don't know. Jesus Christ. Now, of course, this is entirely the ravings of an insane person. Anything signed by the President of the United States, any president, as part of the UN Convention, can only be implemented through domestic legislation enacted by Congress or state legislatures in a manner and time frame determined by our own legislative process. There is no way Bush, Obama, Clinton, whoever's president, they can't do it. And this guy's a judge and he doesn't know this? This is all at Huffington Post, by the way. You can find it there. Now, it says, while it might seem outrageous that such a bizarre conspiracy theory is being promoted by an elected official as grounds to support a particular policy, no less, Het isn't the only one. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney appeared to give some credence to the same theory in response to a question at a town hall meeting in Ohio last month. Romney said, quote, Romney, turning to the United Nations to tell us how to raise our kids or whether we can have the Second Amendment rights that our Constitution gave us. I mean, that's the wrong way to go, right? Do not cede sovereignty. I'm happy to talk there. I'm not willing to give American sovereignty in any way, shape, or form to the United Nations or any other body. We're a free nation. We fought for freedom and independence. We're going to keep freedom and independence. And this guy is running for president. And he's going to get 50 million votes. And the sheriff head down in Texas is a goddamn psycho. And Romney's a psycho. And Ryan's a psycho. And a former Marine who posts on his own personal goddamn Facebook page. That he thinks 9/11 was a government conspiracy. And we're moving to corporate fascism. And the U.S. government is pushing us toward a one world banking system. A little behind the times there, but yeah. And for this, they glom him up. Hold an involuntary commitment hearing and put him in a mental institution? If Bob Alexander is listening to the program tonight up in Canada, he's probably sitting there going, this is just what I wrote to you the other night. We'll be right back.
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So the President of the United States now has the power to order the assassination of American citizens. I know. There's a signing statement that goes with what Obama signed, the bill that he signed into law. And he put a signing statement, I'll never do this. I guess. I don't know. Some say he signed it. Some say he didn't. Maybe, could be, who knows, signing statement. Blah, blah, blah. So the President of the United States, whether it's Obama or anybody else, now has the power to assassinate American citizens anywhere on earth. And there were some comments that the Richmond News Leader, they picked up on the story, some comments there that said, well, you know, this guy's postings, Rob, his posting should have triggered an investigation. He didn't threaten to kill anyone. He said that he said the things that I told you he said. But if the top down power in this country now reserves for itself the right to lock up Bradley Manning and hold him in solitary confinement, if the top down power in this country can rendition people to other countries for torture, if we now have the law written that says American citizens can be assassinated on the whim of whoever the commander in chief is, if we have all that in effect, and we do, then somebody posting on a Facebook page or wall that he is concerned, that he thinks the 9/11 investigation should be reopened, that he's suspicious of government officials, blah, 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 and they come out and put him in a mental hospital? Really? Okay. In the meantime, Rupert Murdoch's terror broadcast network is trying to set up another murder. No, this one doesn't come from O'Reilly or Beck. I know Beck, it doesn't work there anymore, but Fox News said yesterday or today that it has identified the real identity of the Navy SEAL who has written that book about his participation in the raid that killed Osama bin Laden. Associated Press later confirmed the report. Now, you know everything that's been going on here. The author of this book, first of all, is a turncoat son of a bitch who has betrayed the entire... That's not me talking. I'm not calling him a turncoat son of a bitch. You know my feelings about assassination hit squads. Please! But other Navy SEALs are calling him a turncoat son of a bitch because he has betrayed the secrecy under which they work to go into other people's countries and murder folks. So he wrote this book in betraying his comrades. I don't care what your feeling is or my feeling is about the SEALs. This guy betrayed them, and he's written a book. And describing, apparently, the publisher says he's going to describe hour by hour, minute by minute, what happened in the assassination of bin Laden. And he used a pseudonym to write it, Mark Owen. The title of the book is No Easy Day. It was just announced yesterday. See, it was this quick. It'll be released on September 11th. 911. Has not been vetted or cleared by the Pentagon. And the author's using the pseudonym Mark Owen. But guess what? Today, Fox News ran an item with what it claimed was the author's true name. And I have it right in front of me here, but I'm not going to be a part of this bat crap. It even named the town where he lives. So Fox News identifies him and the town where he lives and says they have multiple sources who confirm it. The Associated Press later ran a similar report citing current and former military officials. The Fox News report led to a rebuke from Nation magazine writer Jeremy Scahill, hardly a knee-jerk supporter of the U.S. military. Gawker's John Cook linked to a Fox News report from 2011 chastising Gawker for attempting to uncover the identity of a CIA agent involved in the raid. In response to what Fox has done, Fox wants another murder. They have a bunch of notches on their belt. Rupert Murdoch is a terrorist. Everybody who works at that station is a terrorist. They want people murdered. And so far, they're responsible for probably 10 or 15 shoot downs in the streets of the United States as a result of what they put out on Fox. So they want another one. Too much time has passed since the last one. They're trying to set this guy up to be killed. Now, the fact that he's a Navy SEAL means that it'd be a little bit more difficult to kill him than people walking down the street or somebody who gets in the way of a bullet intended for a physician. You know, Bill O'Reilly's target, Dr. Tiller. So, in response to what Fox has done, Penguin, the company publishing the book, issued a statement to the New York Times. It said that the author faced, quote, obvious risks to his personal security. And that was the only reason the book was being published with a pseudonym. The statement concluded, quote, "We respectfully request that all news organizations and all Americans consider these facts when deciding whether to pursue or publicize his real identity." Now, that statement was issued yesterday. Today, the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization goes on the air with their asses up in the air. Oh, guess what we got? We got his name. We'll tell you where he lives. Fox is a terror organization whose sole function is to target people for death. That's what they do. That's what their show hosts do. Why is Fox on the air? Why does Rupert Murdoch have a broadcast license? Why do these half-witted freaks who sit on that set on Fox every day and do this, why are they allowed to continue? Anybody got any ideas? Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Just reading a message here from our chat room. One of our regulars there has maybe broken her hand. So to Four Earth, come on, baby, get well. You have to understand in the Mike Malloy chat room here, and you can go to it if you want to. It's kind of an extended family. There's a whole bunch of people in there that meet there every night and listen to the program and do all kinds of stuff, weird stuff, really weird stuff. So if you want to. If you want to join, just go to MikeMalloy.com, and the chat link is there. But you have to be a righteous individual and, you know, a little bit crazy. The Reuters news agency is making something very clear that we've been talking about in this program, despite claims that, or the belief, I guess, is a way to put it, that Washington, the United States, the Obama administration, is plotting to extradite Julian Assange, and oddly, Reuters says extradite and execute him. Despite this belief, U.S. and European government sources say the U.S. has issued no criminal charges against the WikiLeaks founder and has launched no attempt to extradite him. Oh, well, then we can all just relax and, hey, Julian, just walk out of the Ecuadorian embassy. U.S. doesn't want you. Sweden just wants to talk to you, right? Huh? Okay. And according to Reuters, moreover, Obama administration officials remain divided over the wisdom of prosecuting Assange. For what? The source said, and the likelihood of U.S. criminal charges against him is probably receding rather than growing. The Obama administration has said Assange's immediate fate is in the hands of Britain, Sweden, and Ecuador. Earlier this year, as you know, British authorities obtained a court order authorizing them to extradite Assange to Sweden for questioning in a sexual case. A sexual case. Questioning. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland. Is she still around? There's a Bush holdover for you, huh? U.S. State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland said on Monday that Assange was making, quote, wild assertions about us, when in fact, his issue with the government of the United Kingdom has to do with whether he's going to go face justice in Sweden for something that has nothing to do with WikiLeaks. So he is clearly trying to deflect attention away from the real issue. Woo! Oh, really? Victoria Nuland's predecessor, P.J. Crowley, said that by taking refuge in Ecuador's embassy and demanding that the U.S. renounce its witch hunt against WikiLeaks, Assange made it more difficult for Washington to abandon what officials there acknowledge is a continuing U.S. probe of Assange and WikiLeaks. But I thought Victoria Nuland says, hey, that had nothing to do with us. B.J. Crowley said that Assange, in a speech on Saturday that we shared part of it with you from an embassy balcony, had, quote, challenged the president to close down the investigation. Crowley said Assange has painted himself into a corner and he's going to stay there for some time. Now, you have to remember, P.J. Crowley resigned after criticizing the Obama administration's treatment of Bradley Manning. So go figure. For about 18 months now, according to Reuters, a federal grand jury in Alexandria, Virginia, has investigated alleged contacts between WikiLeaks operatives, including Assange and Manning, during preliminary hearings, prosecutors in the Manning case alluded to evidence purporting to link Manning to Assange. Legal experts said this showed prosecutors were trying to build a conspiracy case against Assange. Well, I'll tell you what, if you give me a 23-year-old private and complete control over everything he does, I'll have him confessing to killing Abraham Lincoln. This is really madness, and it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Now, let me just add something, because someone has brought it to my attention after I brought up about Sheriff Head, the one said that if Obama is reelected, there's going to be another civil war and everybody go get their guns and all this other stuff. Now, Head wasn't talking about this. I'm sure he has no idea what is even going on. But Bill of Rights man in Cleveland sends me a link to... Do you all know what the TPP is, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's a free trade agreement that is being is trying to be set up. This is really going to make corporate America happy. If you go to Public Citizen, the Nader organization, Public, go to citizen.org, and you'll find the article, Corporate Power Tool of the 1%. And it starts out, it says, have you heard the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement is a stealthy policy being pressed by corporate America, a dream of the 1% that in one blow could offshore millions more American jobs, free the banksters from oversight, ban Buy America policies needed to create green jobs and rebuild our economy, decrease access to medicine, flood the U.S. with unsafe food and products, and empower corporations to attack our environmental and health safeguards. Now, this is from Public Citizen. This is not from some crazed website, right, left, or libertarian. This is from Public Citizen. And it goes on to say, closed-door talks are going on between the U.S. and Australia, Brunei, Chile, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Malaysia, and Vietnam. Vietnam. With countries like Japan and China potentially joining later. 600 corporate advisors have access to the text of these meetings, while the public, members of Congress, journalists, and civil society are excluded. And so far, what we know about what's in there is very scary. This is Public Citizen talking. Now, there's all kinds of resources here. So you got to do this. Go to citizen.org and find TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership. You thought, or I thought, that the agreements signed off on by Bill Clinton were bad? That NAFTA resulted in horror for the American economy? Wait, you read. And yeah, I know a lot of you are way ahead of me on this. I haven't paid any attention to this, but I mean, brought it up on the air. But I'm aware of it, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but I had no idea that it was being conducted like this. I should have. So check it out. Go to Public Citizen or citizen.org and look up TPP.
Right now, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Things are moving too fast for the kid tonight, I swear. Got an email here from Reed. About the former Marine, Reed writes, whose name I missed, wrongly committed in Virginia. Yeah, his name is Brandon Robb. Reed writes, I don't like to assume vast conspiracies where just one putrid scum or just a few will do, so I always consider what simpler explanation than a vast conspiracy could cause the same injustice. In this case, Occam's Razor suggests that maybe a personal acquaintance of the former Marine submitted a frivolous tip to the FBI, claiming the guy was, you know, saying crazy stuff on Facebook. I'm really worried he's about to blow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, blah, blah. Thinking to himself, this will teach that so-and-so to question the bosses or whatever authoritarians think. Also, if it was a vast government plot, it should have occurred to somebody that when a citizen suspects his country is going fascist, arresting him for political speech doesn't exactly serve to discredit his suspicions. I mean, I know we have dimmer fascists than they had in 20th century Italy and Spain, but still, if they're that foolish, wouldn't they all have been hit by buses by now? If only. So, For those reasons, I don't think this is an example of a vast conspiracy, even though the law that allows for imprisonment on the basis of opinions of so-called psychological science, quote, quote, is clearly authoritarian and therefore un-American. Signed, Reed. Okay, because, like I said, things are moving very fast for the kid tonight, the kid being moi. I'm not suggesting a vast conspiracy. I'm suggesting perhaps hundreds of little conspiracies that are all linked. I mean, when somebody is taken into custody and placed in a mental hospital because he posts what, at least what is being reported he posted on his Facebook page, and the FBI, the Secret Service, and the local police are all involved. Again, this guy did not post on his Facebook page, well, I'm going to get a gun and kill everybody in Washington. You know, he didn't say that. That might be reason to send somebody out to have a little chat with him. And in fact, the Richmond News leader quotes a friend of his as saying the guy doesn't even own a gun. I mean, okay. Maybe, maybe not. But, no, I don't see vast conspiracies every place I look at all. I really don't. I think those days, kind of ended, at least the vast government conspiracies ended with the end of the Bush crime family. I do believe that there was some sort of conspiracy, maybe a conspiracy of dunces, of fools. Maybe it was a conspiracy of not paying attention or allowing things to happen. But I've said it before, and I know a lot of people on the left think I'm just absolutely bat guano crazy for saying it, but I don't believe the official story on 9/11. No way. And I do believe that the Bush administration and Cheney and the rest of them and the Project for a New American Century, oops, you're getting into vast conspiracy territory, Mike. I do believe that given what they tried to get Clinton to do in what, 1998 or 1997, right before the Monica thing occurred, those people were pushing for an invasion of Iraq and needed some sort of event, and said they needed a Pearl Harbor type event. And then we have Operation Northwoods from back in the 60s, which served as a perfect model. But no, I usually don't go for vast right-wing conspiracies. There's no need to. You can't step out of your house without stepping on one. That's why. Or something. Reed has a P.S. One of these half-assed right-wing websites is going to have a headline tomorrow that says, Lib Talker says I'm going to get an axe to start chopping people's heads off. Because I said those words as an example of what the former Marine had not said and why he was not a legitimate suspect of suspicion to anybody with a double-digit IQ. Thanks, Reed. You know, sometimes even people who are paranoid are right on target. You got a break here? Yeah, we do. Okay. Oh, by the way, third hour, we're going to talk a little bit about Bradley Manning. So, what's this? Oh, yeah, millions go hungry as Congress considers food stamp cuts. And a New Hampshire sheriff is saying that he will kill people. He will shoot them down to save a child, you know, a little clump of cells from an abortion. I'll have that for you when we come back.
Ooh.
Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
25 before the hour. Listen, I have a favor to ask you. Our friend John Johnson out in L.A. Has one of the few progressive left-wing newspapers left in the country. It's Changelings. And he needs some help, not just financial help. He needs some help, distribution, some other stuff. If you could, go to his website, see if you can do anything. It's the Changelings progressive newspaper. The link is change-links.org. Change-links.org. Would you do that? Change-links.org. His name is John Johnson. Check out the website and see if there's something you can do. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I got this from a blue lady today, Cindy. And she wrote, it's a little bit too late for church night, but we haven't had one of these for a while. A prominent Louisiana-based Christian pastor known for his anti-gay stance. by the way, he calls himself a Christian patriot, and he is notorious in New Orleans lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community for his opposition to the annual Southern Decadence Festival, one of the largest gay-themed events in the world in the French Quarter. He told ABC News one time, "We want them out of town!" before condemning city officials as legalized prostitutes. He later told the news channel that he hoped to take his anti-gay fight nationwide, including to Las Vegas. He said, "We want to take it to every city in the United States, wherever stuff goes on." He really has a problem with gay folk. Well, guess what? You're way ahead of me on this, right? His name is Grant Storm. Grant Storms. Reverend Grant Storms. He was convicted. He was. Of obscenity yesterday after being caught masturbating at a public park right next to a children's playground. As NOLA.com reports, Reverend Grant Storm was sentenced to 3 years probation after the incident at Lafreniere Park. Storm is quoted as calling public masturbation a thrill in his confession. However, despite an eyewitness account cited by the New Orleans Times-Picayune, which stated that the 55-year-old pastor had been looking at the playground area that contained children playing with his zipper down at the time of his arrest, authorities denied any suspicions that he was a pedophile. Oh, my God. Lafreniere Park is a public place, the judge, Ross Ledart, said when he announced the verdict, according to New Orleans Times-Picayune. I hope I'm pronouncing that park right. Lafreniere. The judge said, "Lafreniere Park is a place that was chosen by this defendant to engage in a history of masturbation." At the time of his arrest, Reverend Storms told officers that he really was just attempting to urinate in a bottle inside his van. He later admitted that that was a lie. He's quoted as saying, "All right, I'm confessing to having my hand in my pants. That's all I'm going to say." Oh, Jesus, God. Oh, yes, indeed. Some comments. This was at Huffington Post. Some comments at the end of the article. Here's one. "I guess being a masturbating pedophile is okay for the Christian right, so long as he isn't gay. Now, that would be a crime by their standards. I'm sure some liberal coaxed him into dropping trow and wanging it in front of some kids. Every day, with each story about a Christian leader caught doing despicable acts, brings that religion closer to obsolescence. Self-reflection be damned. Jesus is my personal Lord and Savior. How was he at being your legal aid, scumbag?" And another one, "Reverend Grant told his congregation that the devil had possessed it, and he was tempting to choke the devil into submission He then passed the hat and asked his congregation to give generously so he could continue to fight against the devil. Right, he was choking the devil. That took about 8 seconds for that to sink in, didn't it, Kathy? Huh? Half the audience still hasn't gotten it. Oh, good Lord. Whew. These pastors. No, I wouldn't. I'm not. I just like to do it out in public. I get a thrill. Well, what about all those kids over there? What kids? For kids? Nearly one in five Americans. Get this. Nearly one in five Americans. This is real obscenity. This crazy goddamn Christian pastor, he'll be forgiven. You know, his congregation, that's all right. That's all right, Reverend Storms. Well, goddamn liberals got, he did that to you. He's all right. So forget him. Nearly one in five Americans could not afford the food they or their families needed at some point in the past year. That's according to a Gallup poll released this week. Shows that 18.2% of Americans did not have enough money to buy the food that they or their families needed at least once during the past year. In 15 states, at least one in five Americans polled in the first half of 2012 reported struggling to pay for food during the past 12 months. Little has changed since last year when 18.6% of Americans reported struggling to afford food. But, yes, indeed. Republicans in Congress are proposing food stamp cuts, and that's during the worst drought in a century that could make matters even worse. The U.S. Department of Agriculture predicts that consumers will see meat and dairy prices increase within the next 2 months. Blah, blah, blah. So, with millions of our brothers and sisters out here struggling to fight off hunger, and anti-poverty groups asking that Congress abandon proposals to cut off support for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. The Republicans in Congress are just telling them, you know, to eat their bootstraps or something. You know, they've got to continue tax cuts for the wealthy and increase them. So, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, fancy name for food stamps, is on the chopping block yet again. Jim Weil, who's the president of the Food Research and Action Center, said, quote, the numbers underscore the point that people still continue to struggle, and the cuts that some in Congress are proposing to our nation's nutrition safety net will only worsen a bad situation, end quote. Now, of course, this is what the Ryan budget, which promotes more tax increases for the ultra-wealthy, also proposes deep cuts into the social safety net, including food stamps. And one of their justifications, well, there's a lot of fraud in it. Oh, come on, for Christ's sake, Reagan used that 30-some years ago. Welfare queens going up to the welfare office in their Cadillac. Yeah, I saw it happen. I did. They get their stamps and they go to the local supermarket and they buy porterhouse steaks. They do. Yeah, they do. And then they go back to the ghetto and trade in those stamps for gas money so they can gas up their Cadillac and go buy cocaine. Yeah, that's what they do. This is all designed to cause the white, the white Republicans have nothing to run on. So they're going back to the race card. They're going back to, you know, those dark skinned people, those black folks, you know, those welfare queens, those Cadillac queens, you know, food stamps and stuff like that. Well, did you hear the other day? Obama has cut out the work requirements and, temporary assistance to needy families that Clinton put in there. Yeah, he did. President Obama did? Well, he issued an executive order, and that order says that all, if he's reelected, all these folks have to do is just go down to the welfare. That's right, just go down the welfare and get their money. They don't have to work. Don't have to be looking for a job. They just get their money. Yeah, Obama signed it. He did. I heard it on the Fox channel. I heard Glenn Beck talk about it. Yes, he did. white people. White people. Look, I realize it's rough in this country for everybody. But rather than fall back on that tired asshole position, why don't you do something about it, white folks? Why don't you rise up in the millions and tell corporate America you've had enough? Or are you a bunch of goddamn cowards? You really are. You really are, white people. You're cowards. You're scaredy cats. You're afraid to move. You're afraid to wheeze or fart or get off your couch. You're terrified. So you fall back on that tried and true thing that the white politicians will feed you until you're so bloated with it you explode, and then they'll continue to feed it to you. It's them welfare people. They're the ones that did this.
Why can't it all be like it was before? How can I explain why mommy's not here anymore? Daddy likes porno and $10 whores. Daddy gets wasted and robs liquor stores. Daddy likes rubbing against little boys on the bus. I think that's why your mommy left us.
Starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, don't I wish. So, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program funding is included in the 2013 Omnibus Agriculture Appropriations Bill. How's that for a mouthful? Too bad you can't eat those words, right? The Senate version would cut $4.4 billion over 10 years and would cause about 500,000 households to lose an average of $90 in nutritional assistance each month. The cuts in the House version, which seeks $16 billion in SNAP reductions, The Senate, $4 billion. The House, where these filthy Christian Republicans all cluster, wants to multiply that by four and cut $16 billion from the nutrition program. They would also change eligibility requirements, which would push about 2 million people out of the food stamp program. And Jim Weil, the president of the Food Research and Action Center, said those cuts to SNAP will particularly harm seniors, children, and working families, taking food away from the poorest and most vulnerable among us. The White House opposes these cuts, which are supported by Republicans. Do these Christian fundamentalists, teabag, hypocritical sons of bitches ever sit down and read their own Bible? Not the Bible. To hell with the Bible. Do they ever read what their own, what they call their Lord and Savior, their Son of God, what he said about this kind of stuff? Do they ever? If they do read it, if they do read, is it Matthew? I'm so tired of quoting it, I could just scream. But they're the ones who bring it up. You know, about as you do, what you do to the least of these among you, you do it to me. And that includes feeding the hungry and caring for the sick and taking care of the poor. And these Republicans, these self-satisfied, smug bastards, the politicians who are bought and paid for by the capitalists who love this. They love this. You know, how are you going to argue against Christians, right? Baby Jesus? Christmas time, you know, how are you going to argue against? There's a war on Christmas!
They're trying to take down the major scene in the town square. Goddamn, go get the torches and pitchforks.
So how do you argue against that? See, how do you say, wait a second, there's something wrong here. You can't eat the manger scene in the town square. What you need is food.
Oh, you gotta stop abortions!
Yeah, okay. What about when they are born and they become children and they need to eat food? What about that?
Well, goddammit, eat their bootstraps! Pray!
What did Pastor Hagee say?
Let him starve! Starve, goddamn you!
He didn't say God damn you, but he was thinking it. This is the Pastor Hagee that has this filthy, degenerate alliance with the Israeli Likud party to assist in bringing Jesus back by causing war in the Middle. You know, it just goes on and on and on with these crazy bastards. It's astonishing to me. So here you have these good Christians and Catholics and Mormons and, you know, they're all clustered like a bunch of rats around a decaying corpse, you know, and they're all feeding and they're just eating away. In the meantime, people are starving. People are not. Oh, what's the point? I get tired of talking about this stuff. Don't you get tired of listening? Yeah. New Hampshire, I say he's a sheriff, a sheriff's candidate in New Hampshire. Says if he's elected, he will arrest anyone involved in an abortion in his county. His name is Frank Szabo. He set off a firestorm with the comments. People on the right and the left have condemned the statements, but Szabo says, you know, bite me. He stands by him. He said his sheriff's job to protect every citizen, even the citizens who are not citizens yet. He injected the issue of abortion into a debate for sheriff when he sent out a debate saying he would, or sent out a press release saying he would arrest anyone. And then he took it a step further when asked how far he'd go to stop an abortion. He said, deadly force is the last thing law enforcement should be using. If a citizen's life is in danger, they should be protected. If there's no other choice, that's what's needed to protect the citizen. He'll kill the mother. He'll put a goddamn bullet in the mother's head. This must be another of Bill O'Reilly's audience. Or is it Michelle Malkin? Or who is it? Yeah, I'll shoot him. This freak went on to say, why is there a difference between someone who is 20 years old and their life is in danger and someone who is 9 months in utero? I'll kill him. I'll shoot him. Republicans in New Hampshire have, lost their load again over this guy. Republicans here called Szabo's statement irresponsible, outrageous, and inappropriate. Oh, give me a goddamn break. You people just agree with them 100%. So you're going to shoot the mother, huh? Shoot the mother. Well, I'm going to stop an abortion. And if the bitch won't get up off the table, I'll put a goddamn bullet in her. That's what I'll do. That'll stop it. Yeah. How about that? Bradley Manning stuff when we come back. Stay with us if you can. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. The Malloy Program, Hour 3. Bradley Manning. Let me see a show of hands. How many people know the name Bradley Manning? Well, if you listen to this program, of course, you should. It should be 100% hands raised there. Not because we talk about it that much, not at all, but because you should be aware of who he is and what he has gone through and what he is going to continue to go through. He is the aspect of the Julian Assange case that doesn't get a whole bunch of media attention in this country, if media attention at all, simply because of the nature of the charges against him. For corporate media to come to his defense and just reporting on the story would be considered, I'm sure, by the war establishment in this country, which is goddamn near everything, that would be considered coming to his defense, just reporting on the story, pointing out what has happened to this young man. What is he, 23, 20, 24? Fort Meade is the current home of the hearings of Private Bradley Manning. Now, the other day, I was reading in thestranger.com, thestranger.com. It's a good website. Jake Blumgart writing there. From whose piece, I'm going to quote extensively here. Now, you know that Manning is the intelligence analyst accused of providing hundreds of thousands of military and State Department documents to WikiLeaks. And, of course, as you know, WikiLeaks is dedicated to the exposing the secrets of anyone with power.
Wow! Oh, no! No.
Yes. So Manning, as part of the accusations against him, is accused of the largest data spillage in American history. Now, that's not a crime. That's just a fact of the case against him. And as Jake points out, the most famous releases included the video WikiLeaks dubbed Collateral Murder, which depicted a U.S. helicopter gunship firing indiscriminately into a crowded street in Baghdad, leaving 13 dead, including a Reuters journalist or two. A lot of media reports refused to say two because one of them apparently was a freelancer. In chat logs that were produced, logs of Manning talking with the hacker who eventually turned him in those logs, Manning allegedly said he hoped what he was leaking to WikiLeaks, quote, might actually change something, end quote. Oh, my God. Might actually change something. Well, there you go. What was up for change? U.S. policy in Iraq, stopping indiscriminate murder from helicopter gunships, shooting on innocent civilians, scrambling like ants across the street in Baghdad? Or was the something that Bradley Manning hoped would be changed, was it bigger than that? Was it the violent death throes of a dying empire? Us. Who knows? Other leaks, according to Jake Blumgart, included on-the-ground accounts of incidents in the Afghanistan and Iraq wars and diplomatic cables from State Department officials. None of the leaks was top-secret material, and a majority wasn't even classified. Let me repeat that. None of the leaks was top-secret material, and a majority of everything he put out there wasn't even classified. But the Obama administration and the military have gone after Manning with what Jake Blumgart calls disturbing ferocity. Disturbing ferocity. Manning was arrested over 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, May 2010. And before his present incarceration at Fort Meade, he underwent a lengthy stint at Marine Corps Base Quantico in Virginia. At Quantico, Manning was subjected to treatment that 250 American legal scholars, including one of President Obama's mentors, described in a protest letter as cruel and inhumane. Among other things, Manning was subjected to forced nudity, 24-hour camera surveillance, harassment under the guise of concern for his well-being, and months-long solitary confinement, despite model behavior. Manning's transfer to Fort Meade marked the beginning of a seemingly endless series of pretrial hearings. These are held on the base, older part of the base, where the housing and administrative buildings are red brick. 76 reporters from dozens of outlets descended on the base during the first day of hearings in December last year. By the second day, the number of journalists fell from 76 to 41. The numbers have only dwindled as the interminable process has dragged on. Now, there's a point to that, I think, that Jake doesn't mention, but this process, drag it out as long as possible, the government, drag it out in the military, drag the process out. Eventually, there won't be any reporters left, except maybe people like Jake Blumgart or somebody from Huffington Post or from The Nation or someone like that. Maybe Fire Dog Lake blogger Kevin Gostula. Names that the average American has never heard of. But they will continue to be there. Mainstream media, they don't care. Bradley Manning, we got important things to talk about. We got to talk about this phony-ass presidential race. We got to talk about the Republicans. We got to talk about Obama's attack ads. We got to talk about the fact that Paul Ryan wants to kill Social Security. In the meantime, what is possibly one of the most important cases in recent American history is going unreported, unattended, unwatched, but the process continues to grind on. As Jake points out, Jake Blumgart at TheStranger.com, on a recent morning, the shriveled pool of reporters consisted of representatives from Al Jazeera, the Associated Press, Courthouse News, the French Wire Service, Jake himself, who is an independent correspondent representing TheStranger.com. Also in attendance was Fire Dog Lake vlogger that we just mentioned, Kevin Gostula, who has stuck with the process throughout the entire length of this event so far, and co-written a book with The Nation's Greg Mitchell about Manning's case. The title of the book is Truth and Consequences, the U.S. versus Bradley Manning. Someone in the clutch of writers snorted, still no one from the New York Times. Now, as Jake points out, the Manning case has struggled to maintain sustain public interest since day one. Even the Obama administration's tacit condoning of Manning's unconstitutional punishment has gained little attention until blogger Glenn Greenwald began writing about it at Salon. Even then, debate and concern were largely relegated to activist groups and politically inclined journalists. Unlike, say, the crappy economy and healthcare reform, issues of civil liberties or foreign policy are just not that popular in the United States. More in a minute.
For Radical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
Fat Charlie the Archangel sloped into the room.
21 past the hour. So we're talking about Bradley Manning, because one of the reasons, because nobody else does, that's just one of the minor reasons. The major reason is what is happening, or what has happened, continues to happen to this young Army private. This report is by Jake Blumgart. It's in thestranger.com from August 14th. Jake Blumgart. He describes one of these pretrial hearings at Fort Meade, Maryland. Inside the courtroom, hulking guards idled around the exits. When Manning entered the chambers, a new batch of burly guards materialized throughout the courtroom, establishing a wall of muscle between the gallery and the prisoner. Manning's escorts towered above him, emphasizing Manning's slight build. He's only 5'2 and very slender. While the pretrial hearings are going by largely unobserved by anybody, this series of skirmishes will decide the legal terrain on which the eventual trial will be fought. The defense is led by David Coombs, C-O-O-M-B-S. He is attempting to get the 22 charges reduced or rejected, especially the most serious one, Article 104, which is aiding the enemy. The enemy Manning is supposed to have aided was Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. That's according to the military. Go figure. Now, while this charge is akin to treason and could incur the death penalty, the military is not seeking the death penalty. David Coombs, his defense attorney, challenges the aiding the enemy charge and argued that if it is found that he did unintentionally aid the enemy, such a ruling would set a precedent where future cases involving whistleblowing or minor leaking could result in the death penalty. Coombs said, quote, "Our society values life more than that. If we take someone's life away, we'll take it for an intentional act," end quote. The military judge, Colonel Denise Lind, refused to drop the Article 104 charge. And according to Jake Blumgart, thus far the hearings have suggested little hope for Manning and his supporters. All charges still stand. In a particular blow to the defense, Colonel Lind, the judge, disallowed evidence showing that Manning's alleged leaks were not detrimental to national security. There's evidence that shows that. She will not allow it into the trial. The prosecution, on the other hand, insisted that, quote, "the crime is complete," end quote, as soon as a leak takes place. Although Judge Lind retorted that, quote, "the crime is complete only if the offense is proven," end quote. Now, there are at least three more rounds of pretrial hearings left, another week beginning August 27th. Then a day in September, and then another week in October. And it'll be this last round in October where Attorney Coombs will attempt to hold the military responsible for Manning's treatment at Quantico. The defense will move to dismiss all charges because of the undeniably heinous treatment Manning suffered at Quantico. And if that does not work, then Attorney Coombs will likely motion for Manning's treatment to be used as credit against potential sentencing. Now, there's a part of all this that Jake brings up next that is fairly well known within the circle of supporters, people who have demonstrated in support of Bradley Manning and against his continued isolation and imprisonment. And full disclosure, I'm among that group of people who have participated. For me, it was about a year ago at Quantico with hundreds of other people. But I almost hesitate to bring up the next part, but I think I will on the basis that I think it has to do with explaining why his treatment at Quantico was considered torturous, aside from the fact that anybody would have suffered given the treatment he got at Quantico all those months. But there's an aspect of Bradley Manning that you may not be aware of, and I think this plays into what he's experiencing, and I think the military is deliberately using this against him. And it's, you know, it's not some state secret. It is, no pun intended, it is part of the profile of Manning's defense. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with us.
Give him bottles of lies, and maybe he'll find his place in heaven, because he might just die. Losing hope is easy when your only friend is gone, and every time you look around, well, it all just seems to change. But hanging on is easy when you've got a friend to call, when nothing's making sense at all. You're not the only one who's afraid of change.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
So the aspect of the Bradley Manning case that I think is important to know, because it's going to play into the defense for one thing, and that is this: Manning's defense has noted Manning's psychological struggles related to the military's ban on gay and transgendered soldiers. Manning was arrested 7 months before President Obama signed the legislation that led to the lifting of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell nonsense. Now, in his alleged chat logs that the government seized, Manning wrote, quote, "I wouldn't mind going to prison for the rest of my life or being executed if it wasn't for the possibility of having pictures of me plastered all over the world press as a boy," end quote. Now, it has been widely reported. I don't know how often people pay any attention to it. But it is, given the tenor and the tone in this country, it is an aspect of this case that has to be considered. But a month before his arrest, Manning sent an email to his sergeant major saying that he believed Manning suffered from gender identity disorder. And he attached a photo of himself as a woman, dressed as a woman. And after his arrest, information about female hormone treatments were found among his belongings. But his lawyers have said that Manning wants to be referred to as a man. And the armchair psychoanalyzing that so many have indulged in regarding his gender is, in fact, ultimately irrelevant, except for the fact of where it is occurring. In a homophobic military, in a country that has a massive overcurrent of homophobic hatred. So this aspect of the Manning case is one that has to be considered. In a just society, a rational society, it wouldn't make any difference. And as Jake Blumgart points out, ultimately, it is irrelevant. Would that were true. Now, as Bumgart says, whether Manning is guilty or not, whether he should be prosecuted or praised, whether he's a whistleblower or an indiscriminate dumper of information, take your pick of all that, it's clear that Manning's case is an example of a larger trend in American society. The powerless and economically vulnerable are held to punishingly harsh standards, while the rich and powerful get away with a slap on the wrist, if that. We mentioned this before. If you steal $100 from the grocery store, you go to jail. You steal $10,000 from your employees through shady employment practices, worst thing that can happen is you might have to pay them back. Probably not. If an anti-poverty organization is involved in a scandal, Congress cuts off its funding. But if a big bank indulges in racist lending practices to line the pockets of its executives, it gets a stipulation-free bailout. You say, you know how it works in this country. Chris Hayes at MSNBC defines it as the inequality of accountability. And it's one of the most disturbing aspects of Manning's case. Manning may spend the rest of his life in jail for allegedly leaking low-level information about our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to the public. But that's information that has caused little, if any, harm to anyone. But the high-ranking officials who lied to get the United States to go to war with Iraq, those officials who ordered the torture of human beings, those officials who allowed extrajudicial killings of American citizens, they're not even accused of crimes, let alone charged. Manning gets stripped naked in solitary confinement, while the powerful get lucrative book deals. Now, his court-martial is not likely to be held until February 2013. And as Bumgart points out, by that point, he will have been imprisoned without sentencing for more than 1,000 days. Jake Blumgart writing at thestranger.com. Now, going back to his possible gender identity issue that Manning was dealing with before he was slammed. That's the reason. You remember during the initial imprisonment of Bradley Manning, there was a lot of publicity about the fact that part of the torture that he was subjected to was being stripped and denied any kind of clothing whatsoever at night. And in the morning, he had to stand in front of his cell naked and wait for someone to bring him one of the guards to bring him something to put on. This is why it was so torturous, the part about his gender identity issues. Manning being forced to be nude as a male in front of other males, being humiliated by being stripped, by all of his clothing taken away from him, was part of the psychological torture that the Army applied. The Marine Corps applied. They knew damn good and well about his background. When he was arrested, the information about his issues around gender identity were seized. The military that arrested him, the prosecutors, everybody involved, they knew what Manning was struggling with. Hence, well, we'll fix him. We'll strip him naked. We'll make him stand there with his male body, even though he may consider himself to be a female, as he notified his sergeant major prior to his arrest, but we're going to humiliate him this way. So when you hear, or a couple of years ago when you heard that Manning, part of the process against him was stripping him naked, and you may have thought, oh, big deal, so what? You know, I mean, he's in a total male environment, probably. Not that there are not female guards at Quantico, but predominantly male. It's a Marine, so what? So who cares? This is the reason that stripping of Manning naked and forcing him to be nude over long periods of time was such torture for him. But of course, the military or the power structure in this country, if they find some weakness about you and they want you, they will exploit that weakness until you collapse. We know this. Come on. It's one of the oldest forms of breaking someone's will or resistance there is. It's what Orwell wrote about. What was in room 101 that Winston Smith could not tolerate? Smith could tolerate anything. He made that clear with the torture that O'Brien applied to him. Even though he tried to see five fingers when O'Brien held up three, or three fingers when O'Brien held up five. But it wasn't until O'Brien said, we're going to have to take you to room 101. And Winston Smith said, what is room 101? What's in room 101? And O'Brien said, the worst thing in the world. I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much what it was. Once a torturer, in this case, the United States government, in the form of the military that arrested him, once they understand what your weakness is, or your deepest fear, or your psychological breakpoint, or everybody has it, I'm sure. Once they find that, that's where the pressure is applied. So the Bradley Manning case, while it gets practically zero attention, it is the aspect of the Julian Assange WikiLeaks case that could be considered to, I think the U.S. government is considering it to be the keystone, the touchstone, the key part of everything. If Bradley Manning can be tortured to the point where he will admit to or suggest that there was some sort of conspiracy between him and Assange or any other parties involved, then the case changes. Then it becomes conspiracy to commit treason against the United States. Even though Assange is he an Australian citizen, or has he got different citizenship now? I'm not sure. But this is one of the reasons why breaking Bradley Manning is so important to the Obama administration. Just thought you might like to know.
Those that works, who will it? Can't believe the big screen. There's no justice in the hall. We're all criminals waiting to be called. They say don't step off the sidewalk. And don't cross over the line. But we'll serve time at night. And the lights begin to dim. And the smoke seems to clear. You can't say what you want. We're all criminals here.
For the hour. And one more thought on Julian Assange. It came from Michael and Roswell. It's a good postscript to the Manning piece we just went through. Michael writes, I think the last figure I read was that the U.S. military special ops teams are in something like 120 countries around the world. Now, we know what special ops are, right? 120 countries around the world. And the Obama administration has continued the Clinton-Bush-era policy of rendition, which is state-sponsored kidnapping. So even if the Ecuadorian government finds a way to get Assange out of its embassy in London and to Ecuador, which will be difficult but not impossible, there's every chance that Assange would be snatched by the U.S. in Ecuador, spirited off to jail in the United States, or even more troubling, to Guantanamo, or effectively disappeared in some other location. Even if the Ecuadorian government succeeds in giving him safe haven, Assange is not safe. The U.S. government has steadfastly maintained that Assange is not a journalist and that WikiLeaks is not engaged in journalism. And in fact, the U.S. does not respect independent journalism anyway, since it has detained journalists in Guantanamo and Iraq for lengthy intervals. Sami El-Haj was held incommunicado at Guantanamo for over 6 years, mostly so he could be interrogated about his employer, Al Jazeera. And Michael concludes, U.S. doesn't need to kill Assange to destroy him. And that last line is in reference to what I said the other night, that Assange will probably be murdered. And I think what Michael's trying to point out, to destroy him, they don't have to kill him. All they have to do is get their hands on him. And who's this shadowy they? It's us. Now, I find that real upsetting. I don't know if you do or not. And I think this is what Bob Alexander was talking about. And he's mentioned to me in several emails. But in the Moment with Bob pieces that we have read on the air since his leaving the United States, that sense that he gets when he comes back in the United States for a visit, that he is entering an area of great repression and fear. And when he leaves, he has a sense of, escaped again. And I have to tell you, I am starting to seriously get that sense. Are you? I've been talking about this on the air for over a decade, going back to the theft of the election on December 8th, when the U.S. Supreme Court demolished the one remaining aspect of representative government that was still in existence, and that was counting the votes. And it was Stalin who famously said something about it doesn't make any difference who conducts the election. What matters is who counts the votes. Maybe it wasn't Stalin. Maybe that's not the quote. But you understand what I'm saying. I mean, that just stands to reason. It's who counts the votes. But in December 2000, when the Supreme Court said to the state of Florida, well, actually, to the citizens of Florida and also the Florida Supreme Court, you have no authority to order the continuation of the counting of the ballots to determine who won the presidential election of Florida. When that verdict was handed down by the Supreme Court, that ended democracy in this country. It ended it. It stopped at that point. That was it. So it's been over a decade for me. Reporting on and talking about and doing programs on what has happened in this country, and what it's left me with is a real sense of discomfort. If it's not quite yet fear, it is certainly anxiety and discomfort that I live in a country that is truly becoming fascistic in its domestic policies. Its primary religion is becoming fascist. Its policies overseas are so deceptive, so destructive. And when you read, if you have, some of these WikiLeaks cables, and you begin to realize the extent to which our government is involved in deception and lies and deceit and, deception, deceit, same thing. All these different techniques that are not based in truth or honor or justice, you begin to realize that the mythologies about this country are simply that, mythologies. And that leaves me feeling real uncomfortable, betrayed. And knowing full well there's absolutely nothing I can do about it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I don't know if you have felt that, but if you have, send me an email. And if you want to remain anonymous, I'll leave you anonymous, but I'd like to see the email and maybe share it on the air. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.